Macmillan Audio presents The Wildlands by Paul Gracie, read for you by Tristan Morris. Part 1 Chapter 1 "With any luck, we'll be gone by tomorrow," Dad says. I nod and keep stuffing the tent into its sack, looking forward to getting out of this ash bucket, but not to the 400-mile walk north, and not to cramming my 6-foot frame into a small tent with my mom, dad, and sister. We've been living in the cement basement of a burnt-out house for about a year now, in the hills above what used to be Fairbanks, Alaska. An expanse of gray runs to the horizon, ash from the fires that ravaged this place the past 2 summers. The first fires, which the government set intentionally after classifying interior Alaska as a sacrifice area, burned Fairbanks and the 2 military bases east of town, but spared most of the houses in the hills. It used to be that only places the military had trashed were labeled as sacrifice areas, but now the government was using the term for places it couldn't support anymore, and it was destroying those places so other countries couldn't benefit from what was left behind. But no one knows who started the fires the second summer. Those fires reburned the town, blazed through the hills, and scorched the land as far as the eye can see. Trees are memories. Buildings are memories. We inferno survivors, however many or few, are all living in basements, tiny ribbons of green, spindly stalks of firewood pushing through the ash, spaced far and wide, are the only signs of plant life I can see from our place. I wanted to leave 3 years ago, when most everyone else fled this wreck of a place, when the United States government said they could no longer support Alaska due to the scarcity of resources worldwide. They'd been pulling back for years now, ever since the oil ran dry up here. They couldn't keep pumping energy into a faraway place that wasn't giving any back, never mind that they'd sucked every ounce of oil from the ground and shipped it south. But they offered everyone an out 3 years ago, when they withdrew statehood status, a bus ride north from Fairbanks to the Arctic coast, on the last road that was actually drivable with the last gas available. Then a journey in a ship east across the Arctic Ocean, and then south to the Maine coast, where evacuees would be resettled. Way back, it used to be that heading north meant heading into a wilderness where you'd bump up against an ocean that was frozen most of the year. But for years now, the Arctic Ocean has been ice-free in the summer. But if you stayed, you were on your own. "Travis," Dad says, "how's the cash coming?" I pulled the drawstring tight on the tent stuff sack. "I should have it finished today." Dad stops cleaning his shotgun, his 3 remaining slugs lined up on the floor. "Should have?" The edge to his voice makes my stomach go raw. "You'd better have it finished today." I want to tell him to finish it himself if he's not happy with how long it's taking me, but I know he's under a lot of pressure. Pressure he could have avoided if he wasn't so freaking stubborn. And it's not like digging the cache is the only thing I'm doing. Every time I breathe, he gives me something else to do. "It's just taking a little longer than I thought," I tell him. "I'll finish packing up in here," he says. "Just go. Finish that cache. Christ." My head slumps. Whatever I do, and however fast I do it, it's never enough. The cache is just a big hole about a quarter mile from our basement. 6 feet deep, 6 feet long, 4 feet wide. Coffin-sized. Our plan is to bury some of what we can't take with us in case we have to come back. Food, clothing, tools, packs. But we'll leave some stuff out in the open so when the looters come, hopefully they won't look any farther. And if they do discover evidence of something buried, hopefully they'll think it's a grave and leave it alone. Yeah. Looting is standard practice. Whenever anyone leaves or dies, their stuff...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?